The Daily Connect Podcast.
And this is the Daily Connect Podcast for Monday, the 19th of November, 2018. Hello, Stephen Scott here with you. Coming up today, we're going to be checking in with Una Mulgrew. She is from RNIB Connect, and she'll be telling us all about what is coming up in Northern Ireland over the next week or so. Also, moving house. It's a challenge for anybody, but if you're blind or partially sighted, what are the issues and what tips could someone bring to the table on that one? We hear from Maya Liam Haynes, who talks about their experience of moving house as a visually impaired person. And we'll also be hearing a bit of poetry on the podcast today, courtesy of Aidan Flynn, who talks about his poem, I Sold My Guide Dog on eBay. Thankfully, it's not based on a true story. But first, we start off with news on cybersecurity. Raj Sumani has been talking to Simon Pawley about the do's and don'ts as we head up to Christmas time and all of those great deals that you find online. But how do you stay safe while you're online? Well, Raj has been giving Simon some important advice.
I think for me, what I found most remarkable was just how late we leave our shopping. I mean, you know, generally speaking, we're spending up to 4 to 5 months to actually save for one single day. And yet the remarkable thing is broadly people are waiting for the last 2 weeks before they start their shopping. And actually in Scotland, actually it's the last 11 days.
Yeah, the back's against the wall.
Absolutely. And, you know, we kind of let our guard down. So things such as, you know, looking for the cheapest price, one in two of us might end up going to a website that we've maybe not used before and certainly isn't one of the more trusted websites that we all kind of know of. But equally, things like, you know, where we're being offered next day delivery, we're more likely to go for a site that offers that quicker delivery, regardless of whether it's something that we've used before or not.
The thing is, it's a bit of a minefield. A lot of our audience are either blind or partially sighted. You know, going on websites can be a bit of a minefield.
Well, absolutely. But the reality is, you know, 93% of people are actually shopping online. So that is, you know, that's almost everybody today.
Now, I had a bad experience last year. I ordered and bought a rather nice saxophone. Well, I thought I had. The company took the money, but the saxophone never arrived. And I felt really helpless with that. Now, as far as I knew, they were a legitimate company.
Well, and the sad thing is that, you know, what you're describing has actually happened to almost one in two people. The stress of the Christmas season can actually cause them to behave really carelessly as well.
What are some things that we could do then to try and help safeguard ourselves then?
So there's three tips that I could give today. And, you know, one of them actually revolves around how you connect. Many of us, and in fact 20% of people may well shop by using the wireless network from a coffee shop, for example. And obviously that's one of the things that they need to address.
So what is the risk of doing that then?
Well, if it's an open wireless network, then people can actually what we call sniff the traffic. In other words, they can actually listen to the communication that you're having with the website. You know, when you're shopping online, what you want to do is ensure that, you know, from your phone or from your computer to the actual seller itself, there's nobody there that's actually trying to capture the information. And so the important thing is to either use a secure connection, i.e., you know, if you're connecting from home, for example, but also perhaps look at security software like a virtual private network. In other words, it kind of what we call encrypts the connection between the two. So it means that nobody can kind of intercept that. The other thing that people need to look at is where you actually do your shopping. So just think before you click. You know, is it a website that you've used before? Or actually, is it a trusted seller if you're using an auction website? You know, do they have good feedback? Have they actually, you know, sold things in the past? And then the third thing is browse with security protection enabled as well. So have some degree of security protection on your device.
So how do you know if you're using a network then, apart from at home, that's actually encrypted then?
You know, if you're using a connection like a coffee shop, for example, then it's an open network, so anybody else can actually access that. The other thing is you don't actually know that you're connecting to, say, for example, the coffee shop's network. So there are some people that will set up like rogue networks. Being conscious of how you connect is going to be crucial.
I think there's a temptation when I'm waiting for a train, I browse online, and then you can be tempted then to say, that's right, I've been meaning to get that.
That's what's so great about the internet is because it is so accessible. You can just click a button and have something ordered within minutes. But equally, that's where some of the risks come into place. And, you know, we have to consider that criminals don't rob banks with guns. They use USB sticks. They use computer viruses. And so, you know, as we kind of move and migrate towards more online, naturally so will criminals move from offline crime to more online crime.
What about websites that look official but turn out to be fake? How can you protect against that?
So our recommendation has always been, rather than, for example, clicking on a link in your email, go directly to the website you want to go to. If you're going to be using a website that you don't normally use, like in your case with the saxophone, maybe do some research on the website itself. So, for example, are there any reviews about it? Have other people shopped there in the past? There are steps that you can take, and, you know, just really just think before you click. Just take a step back.
Think before you click. I like that one. That is Raj Samani speaking there to Simon Pauly. Take care when you're buying online. That's pretty much the advice that you're getting there. More to come on that topic in the next few days on the Daily Connect podcast.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now to a bit of poetry on the podcast today. Red Sail picks up the story.
It's not only feminism that raises awkward and amusing dilemmas. Blindness too can offer a rich vein for humour and reflection. In his collection, I Sold My Guide Dog on eBay, poet Aidan Flynn takes a wry look at his own sight loss. Sometimes funny, sometimes poignant, his poems have helped me and many others read our sight loss differently. Here's the title poem.
I sold my guide dog on eBay. I sold my guide dog on eBay. I got 100 quid. Guide dogs weren't very happy when they learnt what I did. I couldn't see a problem. I thought I'd done quite well. But guide dogs, they informed me that my dog weren't mine to sell. I said, please, check your records. I think that you will see that I bought the dog 10 months ago. He cost me 50p. But guide dog said that my contract, the one which I had signed, showed clearly in the small print, even though I'm blind, that the seal was just a token. Well, that's a load of legalese. You really must be joking. But they were deadly serious. They gave me such a rocket. I had to buy the dog back. Now I am sadly out of pocket. 200 quid on eBay. But that's not what's really bothering me. It's guide dogs. They came and took my dog away. And they kept my 50p.
Aidan Flynn, welcome to Read On.
Nice to be here. Nice for you to have me.
What led you to put pen to paper?
To cut a long story short, and it's very difficult for an Irishman not to use 200 words where 20 would do, but basically, believe it or believe it not, Red, I was a GP for 20 years. I developed dry macular disease in both eyes in my mid-40s. That was some 14 years ago. And I had to retire. I was told by the consultant at the time that there was absolutely nothing could be done. And although I'd actually planned early retirement, the way it happened certainly wasn't in the script. And when I became VI, I certainly became VI. I became, if you know your Roman, I became six. From 45, I became a six-year-old brat. And as my wife, Yvonne, who's sighted, would tell you, I became extremely difficult to live with, and I just sulked. Not fair. Can I have my ball back? Don't, won't, shan't. And she just said, right, you're only 45. There's more to life than that. And I found that I had to do something creative. I joined a creative writing class, only to be told, you have to read your stuff. I wanted to write short stories, and couldn't read. So I ended up doing rhyming couplets, and it sort of took off from there.
Well, I'm very glad that it has. I mean, certainly I found a lot to chortle along with, and also an echo of my own frustration at losing my sight. I'll play The Diagnosis, which really struck a chord with me.
The Diagnosis. Sitting in the afterglow. Me. My thoughts. And Matt Monroe. Yesterday, I heard the consultant say, there's nothing can be done. Bang! Bang! Those words rang through my brain like bullets from a gun. Over and over and over again. Bang! Bang! I banged the table. The glass fell to smash upon the floor. Bang! Being blind, I was not able to pick up the pieces, so slammed the door. Bang! Angry at having to call my wife, I dwelt on the fragments of a shattered life. And Matt, he just kept on singing. All my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as if they're here to stay. Bang! Bang! Even after all those years, those words still clang in my ears. I'm sorry, Dr. Flynn. You have macular disease in both eyes. And there's absolutely nothing can be done. Bang!
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, we do like to talk about what blind people get up to in their day-to-day lives because, you know, it's not all about talking about blindness day in, day out, you know. We do other things, including move house. Yes, it's a bit of a nightmare for anybody, quite frankly, but for a blind or partially sighted person, is it any easier? Is it any more difficult? What are the challenges? Well, Maya Liam joins us now from RNIB social media team. Hello.
Hello, how are you? You all
right? I'm good, thank you. You have had this experience recently. Moving house, is it just as bad for us as it is for everyone else?
Do you know what? I think there are similarities. I think there are a few differences you have to think about, but ultimately it's the same as for anybody else, really. But there are just extra considerations, which many blind and partially sighted people will be used to. But it is just as stressful, definitely.
Okay, well, let's start with the very beginning then. So you're looking to get a new place.
Yeah.
What is the process that you go through? And I think maybe it would be helpful for our listeners to understand how much you can see, you know, so that we can sort of understand how that whole process would work for you.
Sure. So I have no vision in my left eye at all. And then I've got a tiny tunnel of vision in my right. So I'm registered blind. But when people ask me what I can see or what my registration is, I go, well, I'm registered blind, but I'm partially sighted, to really kind of throw them off because it's very difficult to describe. But my vision is very clear, so I can read large print and standard print for a very small amount of time. And so that meant that a lot of the kind of paperwork that I had to fill in and all of that sort of stuff, it was quite difficult to do, you know, because they can't enlarge it often because of legalities and things like that, which is understandable. So quite often I'd have like my mum read it to me, or I'd just say, Mum, can you just read this and check what I'm signing, please? it is kind of, you know, 3 or 4 months of paperwork and statements and things like that. But you just have to be prepared for maybe 2 or 3 weeks of stress, a week off, 2 or 3 weeks of stress, a week off. But I think the main thing I'd say is remember that it's all worth it. And then, you know, once you've done all the paperwork and stuff, they check the place, they then kind of inspect it and things like that. And then you're near enough ready to move in, usually in about, sort of, I'd say 6 to 12 months from the point that you apply, depending on, you know, how you apply and all of that. It depends.
It is. I mean, we've got a lot of emails from people, and I know I've spoken to people in the past, I'm sure you have as well, who make that transition from moving from the mum's house to their own place.
Yeah.
And it can be nerve-wracking. I mean, okay, so let's maybe look at the actual house itself, or the flat, or wherever it is you're going. Mm-hmm. You know, how much of that do you get involved in? Do you look for support in other people to make sure that, you know, it's not a rat-infested place you're moving to, you know, that aren't damp patches yeah. climbing up the walls, yeah. all mm-hmm. those things that really matter when you're getting a new mm-hmm. place?
Well, one of the things I did before I actually kind of bought was I took someone with me. So I understand that some people may not have, like, a family member or a carer or a friend. Luckily, I had family members that were very insistent on coming, which for me was fabulous. I was not complaining.
No.
And so they came. But for someone that maybe doesn't have someone, maybe get in touch with, like, your local blind society or something like that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because sometimes there are people that can, like, advocate for you and things. You know, or, like, I don't know, maybe go to your GP, or they can find to put you in touch with someone from the council or whoever it might be to advocate for you, but have an advocate. And also another stage of it is, now I've moved, when my really good friend came over to visit, I said to him, I'm going to have to ask you, does it look clean? Does it look all right? I've been hoovering for an hour this morning. Tell me it looks okay. And he's very honest as well. You need, like, honest friends. And he would tell me if something wasn't done to the point where he'd go, you've missed a bit there. So thankfully, he obviously was very honest and did say to me, it looks absolutely fine. In fact, you're being very flat proud. And I was like, yes, points. Thank you. I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, have people to advocate for you, I think, on your behalf is the main thing. And if maybe, you know, you have a bit of difficulty finding someone to advocate for you, go into the correct channels and push until you get someone to advocate, I think is the main thing.
I mean, you know, one of the luxuries everyone has is that they can choose to live wherever they want. Of course, it does depend on your job and what you do. You may choose to live in a certain part of a city or a town or a village or whatever. But of course, if you're completely blind and you're moving to an area, is it sensible to think about local transport to make sure you're at least aware of the area you're moving to? I mean, moving to a completely new area could be quite challenging and actually quite isolating.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I'm speaking as someone that lives in London, has lived in East London all of their life, hasn't, you know, has literally moved 10 minutes up the road by car from my mum's house. But yeah, I did consider transport. That was the main factor for me, actually, in where I wanted to move to. One of the main things was the route. And actually, what I did was, this is another good tip, is if your work gives you, like, disability leave or anything like that, which I'm very lucky to be offered, you can't get days and days and days off, but I was afforded a day off to just go with a social worker and spend, a rehabilitation officer, sorry, and spend literally about half a day just going around the local area and learning the routes and stuff with the cane. And that was really, really helpful. That was invaluable. And then the next half of the day, I actually made myself do it myself. So that I tackled that isolation thing within, well, a day, really. And now I don't go everywhere. I'm not the most confident person in the world, but I do my set routes and stuff. And it's also very easy to get to all the places that I went to when I lived with my parents. So, for example, church on a Sunday, I can still get to my church that's 5 minutes away from my parents' house. Work, I can get to the shopping centre that I usually go to. I can get to all those places I can get to and still be involved with.
So, obviously, the next step, once you've got the place and you've moved in and you've cleaned it to within an inch of its life,
yeah.
You then are going to go out and start getting all the stuff for it. And I guess that's the joy, isn't it? The next step is furnishing and making it your own. Do you take help along with you on that, or do you do that yourself?
Oh, I took all the help I could get, to be honest.
Right.
There were a couple of things that I wanted, like, I've deliberately but it's been a natural thing, I haven't forced it. I've deliberately realised that actually things like, I have a dark sofa with like bright coloured cushions on it for contrast and stuff. I have like a kind of brightly coloured tablecloth. I have a couple of feature walls. I asked them to keep the wallpaper, so those feature walls actually really help. there were a couple of things that I wasn't backing down on, namely a massive dressing table that I've got in my bedroom, which my mother really fought against, but I got the dressing table, so very happy with that.
Your house?
Yeah.
It's your house, you can do what you like with it.
Oh no, absolutely, yeah, and I have Ariana Grande pictures absolutely everywhere, which is fabulous, that makes me very happy. So I think the main thing is make it yours, like yeah. as much as you might need a little bit more support to make it look nice, make it yours as well and make sure that you like what's being put in there. So I was very lucky, my parents bought me some furnishings and stuff for birthdays and Christmas and as treats when I looked after the pets and things like that. And so they kind of naturally all sort of fitted together, but they were able to go to me, that will not go with the rest of what you've got, or that will really work. But yeah, just have like a few little pieces that you won't back down on regardless. But if someone tells you to get it in a different colour, get it in a different colour.
Yeah, take the advice on it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you know, it doesn't have to be like a family member or a carer either. Sometimes a friend who knows you really well. So like my friends have all gone, this is the most you thing I've ever seen in my entire life. My friends love the dressing table. My family, not so much. It's hilarious.
I'm amazed to find that it's the dressing table that caused all the controversy. But
oh, yeah. It's because it's quite big and quite grand. But I've wanted one since I was about 11 or 12. And so I finally got one.
And you shall have one. No, quite right as well. Listen, it's been great talking to you about this. I think a lot of people will really be pleased to hear that, you know, you've managed to do this. And actually, you know, admitting taking on the help, a lot of people want to do things by themselves, and that's fine. But I think, you know, embrace the help, because do you know what? Moving into a new place, especially if on your own, can be quite isolating. Why not make it a social event and invite your friends and make it more of a thing? Because actually, when your friends come over and it's like, oh, remember when we were out buying this and we did that? And, you know, it kind of builds up your life, doesn't it? Well,
absolutely.
Listen, good luck with the new place. And
thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on and telling us about it.
All right. Thank you very much, Stephen. Take care.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Well, let's find out what's happening in Northern Ireland then. Unamal Grew is here. She works for RNIB Connect.
I'm just letting anybody from the Armagh and the Newry area know that I'm going to hold a community meeting on Wednesday, the 28th of November in the Newry Leisure Centre. The meeting is just to get people in the community together to see if there's any activities that they would like to try to organise, maybe walking groups, book clubs, things like that. You have your own ideas. Please come along. We're going to try to get some stuff up and running in the area. Already there's a few people coming along to the meeting, so you might be meeting new people and you might be meeting people that you haven't seen for a long time. Hope to see you there. For any questions or any queries, please give me a ring on 07702 140761. That is Armagh and Newry in the Newry Leisure Centre on the 28th of November at 10:30. Just to let all the Londonderry folks know that there's going to be a community meeting in the Embassy Buildings on Thursday the 22nd of November, which will start at 11 o'clock. If people could come for a cordial 11, that would be great. So it's just a community meeting to have a discussion on things that we would like to do in the area and how we can go about doing that. I'm just letting any of the folks from the Mid and East Antrim Council area know that the local magazine is now available on audio format. So the council has produced an audio format, which I think is fantastic, and we should be trying to support it and let them know how relevant audio is in this day and age. So please, if you live in the Ballymena, Larne or Antrim area, please go ahead, phone the council, ask the communications department and request an audio version of the council magazine. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Una. That is Unamal Grew there from RNIB Connect in Northern Ireland telling us about what is happening there. If there's something happening in your area that you'd like to tell us about so we can tell everyone else, then email radio@rnib.org.uk. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Daily Connect live from 10 a.m. on RNIB Connect Radio or back on the podcast just after 5. See you then.
The Daily Connect podcast.